you don't have to be left or right or center, that you don't have to have agreed, all of us, with each other on all previous matters. You don't pass any ideological blood test to be here. To be here, all you have to do is oppose NATO's war, say no to NATO, no to war.
The one thing about George which annoys me most is he's teetotal. And there is a Russian saying, which is that you should never trust a man who doesn't drink. Because he must be hiding something, which... I come at this from a slightly different angle from some people, and I'm going to develop that angle. There may be things you agree with, there may be things you disagree with, but don't yell at me till I've finished developing the argument. At that stage, you can yell as much as you like. I'm a former diplomat. I've lived in Russia, I've lived in Uzbekistan, I've lived in Poland. I used to speak both Polish and Russian fluently, though not for some 20 years, and I need a good few drinks now before it starts to flow. I'm also a historian who has studied the British Empire in particular. And I view Russia as an empire. I know, as a matter of indisputable fact, that the Russian Empire grew at exactly the same time as the British Empire grew, and the two were often rivals for territory, and that there are large parts of mainland Russia now, I'm not only talking about the Soviet Union, because, of course, the Russian Empire turned into the Soviet Union, which was still an empire, as you would know if you'd lived among the Uzbeks or the Kazakhs and found what they thought about their former colonial masters. It was a better empire than the British Empire. It provided things like universal education, which we never bothered to do for the locals. It was a better empire than us. But it was nonetheless an imperial occupation, and the local cultures were suppressed, and particularly the Muslim culture was suppressed. And that also happened in other places which are still part of Russia today, like Dagestan and Chechnya. And those places have as much right to independence as Scotland. We don't think of Russia as an empire, and we don't realize that much of the territory of Russia today wasn't added into Russia until the 19th century, because we're kind of psychologically conditioned to think that an empire is somewhere you have to go in a boat, but it's not somewhere you can walk to. Whereas the Russian Empire was acquired by land acquisition. As a result of this perspective, not only do I, as I say, support the independence of Chechnya and Dagestan, I also believe, for example, that Crimea doesn't belong to Ukraine and doesn't belong to Russia. It belongs to the native population, the Crim Tatars, who were not deported by Stalin until the 1950s. And you are a gross hypocrite if you believe that the Chagos Islands should go back to their native population who were deported in the 1960s, but do not believe that the Crimea should go back to its native population who were deported in the 1950s. As I say, these are different perspectives, and it comes from my living amongst some of the former Russian-occupied Muslim peoples. So I look at Ukraine in a different way, having lived in Poland as well. You know, if you lived in Poland, as I did for 4 years, you become very well aware of the massive shifts in European population at the end of the Second World War. The fact that basically fairly well everyone was shunted westward. Much of, about a third of modern-day Poland was Germany, up until 1945. 46. And much of Ukraine was Poland. The greatest cultural city of Poland, of the entire Polish culture, is Lviv, which nowadays we have to call Lviv. But it's a Polish city. It was built by the Poles. It's possibly the greatest architectural achievement of Polish culture. And that was a result of shifts of population after the Second World War. So when you're looking at questions of, you know, who owns the Donbass? Well, actually, most of the Russian population of the Donbass weren't shifted then until 1946. So these matters are complex. It is not a situation that you can look at and say, these are the goodies and these are the baddies. This is absolute right or wrong. You're looking at the working out of very complex historical shifts and antagonisms and fights for resources over centuries. But the one thing you can say for certain is that the answer to none of these questions is to kill people. War is never justified. My own view is that simply as a matter of international law, the Russian invasion of Ukraine was illegal. It was illegal in international law, as illegal as the British invasion of Iraq was illegal in international law. Was it provoked? Yes. Can we understand why it happened? Yes. Was it legal? No. But we are where we are. And the question is now, how do you stop? And this is something else I want to say, where I come from perhaps a different angle of many of you. I want to go back again to my time in the Foreign Office and when the Soviet Union ended. Now, we had been told throughout the Cold War that the Soviet Union was this massively powerful, frightening military power and that we needed to spend huge amounts of public money on weapons systems and military and security services in order to defend ourselves against this massive military power. When the Soviet Union collapsed, and when Western experts, defense attachés and others, were able to get in and actually visit the Russian army, the former Soviet army, they discovered that Russia had approximately 40% of the weapon systems that the intelligence had told us they had, and that those weapon systems were approximately half as effective as the intelligence had told us they had, because the threat of the Soviet Union was massively, massively exaggerated by Western intelligence in order to justify massive arms spending and the corruption and the money and the weapon and the job go down that goes with it. And that remains true to this day. I know a lot of people would love it if the West and Western imperialism and Western aggression were counterbalanced by an equal military force. But it isn't. Russian armed forces are not that strong. And the idea being sold through the media that the Russian army, which cannot take Kiev, could march through Kiev, through Warsaw, through Berlin, through Brussels, through Amsterdam, through Paris, and march through London is obvious bollocks. But that is the idea which we are sold to justify massive military expenditure. And the truth is that the war in Ukraine does not show us that we need massive, massive Western military expenditure to defeat Russia. It shows us precisely the opposite. It shows us that not even a corrupt, disorganized, ill-armed, immediate neighbor of Russia can be easily subdued by Russia. And it could not be easily subdued even before NATO started pouring in massive weaponry in this obscene arms race of death and destruction. And I also want to say to you this. You know, Ukraine is, as we know, the second most corrupt country in Europe. We know what it was doing to its Russian population prior to the invasion. We know about the banning of political parties, the banning of the Russian language, the removal of Russian books. We know all of that. We know all that goes on. But this is a conflict between Russia and Ukraine, between two massively corrupt, massively wealth unequal, oligarchical societies. And I tell you this, Vladimir Putin does not care about the people of Donbass any more than Joe Biden cares about the people of Kiev. These are powerful politicians who represent the global 1%, different camps of the global 1%, but they are all the global 1%, and they are all interested in conflict and death because of its chances to grab hold of resources and because of its ability to fuel that money-making and power-centralizing machine of the military-industrial complex. This is not a war with good guys and bad guys on either side. The people who control militaries, the people who control the weapons of death, the people who send ordinary young people to fight and die and who result in millions, in thousands and thousands of civilian casualties, they are not good people on either side. This war is evil. We do not need NATO. We do not face an adversary. There is absolutely no chance whatsoever. Russia has no interest, has never had the slightest interest. Russia has never, ever in history, ever conceived of a plan to invade the United Kingdom. There just never has been such a plan. Russia has no interest in attacking London. The idea that we need massive weaponry for self-defence is nuts. And the weaponry here, I said to you that largely because of corruption, but for other reasons too, the Soviet army proved to be far less powerful than we'd been told it was. Our army is also far less powerful. I see today in the news that we've spent £5 billion on developing the Ajax armoured vehicle, and not one has been built yet. Think of the corruption involved in that, £5 billion. And look at the money that's been made out of this war. Don't just look at BP, don't just look at Shell, look at British Aerospace, which announced yesterday it had a £49 billion order book as a result of the Ukraine war. This is obscene. This is disgusting. This is people profiting from death and destruction, and this is not people who care about freedom, who care about democracy. This is not people who care about the lives of the people who are dying. This is people who want the war to go on and on and on because it lines their pockets and because ultimately they hope to grab resources. And we should want nothing whatsoever to do with it. NATO. NATO is a part of the evil wrought by the global 1% on ordinary people. NATO is a part of the machinery of destruction and death. There are no good players in war. There are certainly no good players amongst the political leaders in war. We do not need war. War is not the answer to people's problems. War is not the answer to conflict of interest. And the sad thing is, at the end of this war, I'm fairly certain the negotiated outcome will be much the same as it could have been at the start. It will not much differ at all. I think we can talk in the abstract. I've seen war. I was in Sierra Leone during the Civil War. I met children with their arms cut off. I saw people die in agony. The evil of war should not be underestimated. The problem is we are isolated from it. We don't realize just what it means. We talk of the millions who died as a result of the Iraq War. We didn't see them writhe and die in agony. We don't meet many of the children who were orphaned or left limbless. War is the most terrible thing. It is never justified. And this war in particular is not justified. And we should all be deeply ashamed that we are in a country which is part of NATO, which is fueling it. Thank you very much.